surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL Plasma Center and be rewarded for your generosity.
All righty, hour number three of our radio program. That's right, it is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Coming up at 9:40 p.m. Eastern, 6:40 p.m. Pacific, you will hear in the final segment of the show today from the owner of the Florida Panthers, who are off to the Stanley Cup Final as they just swept the Carolina Hurricanes in four games. As you do see Florida advance to the Cup Final, their owner, the Eastern Conference champion owner, Vinny Viola, will join us. And how about this Florida Panthers team? Last year, President's Trophy winner. They get swept out of the second round. This year, I think they got in after 81 games of the regular season, and they had the fewest points out of any postseason team. They were down 3-1 to the juggernaut that is the Boston Bruins, who had the most points and most wins in the history of the NHL. They come on back, you get the Verhaeghe game winner, then they take care of business in round two up against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then you have a really good Carolina Hurricanes team, and you have Carolina go down in four games. And Hickey, I know last night Rod Brind'Amour kind of got dragged for what he said after the game, where that wasn't a sweep to him. I know that we crushed Windhorse for saying, oh, that was like the most impressive losing performance that we've ever seen in a sweep by LeBron James with the Los Angeles Lakers. But you look at what the Hurricanes did. Like, I'm not giving them participation trophy points. They got swept. But I kind of feel as if he was saying, the first two games, we lost in overtime. And one went to four overtimes, and the other one ended rather quickly. Game three, I'm pretty sure it was a one-goal game, because they pulled goalie with about 3.5 minutes to go, and they never scored an empty net. I was just thinking if they scored an empty net or not, and they didn't. And last night, you lose in the final 5 seconds. You want to talk about puck luck? And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying what the Panthers did is lucky, but every team needs some puck luck. Those bounces could have gone the other way. Now, Tkachuk has been sensational for the Florida Panthers, and they acquired him in July, and I don't think people realized how good he is, and he's taken his game to a different level, and they got rid of Huberto, who's part of that team for 10 years. But how Tkachuk has dominated in this series. Think about just this series. Like, how many years do we talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs, and you talk about guys in the top six that when defense picks up in intensity and there's less ice space, that some of those guys get lost for some stretches in the postseason? Just in this series, the guy had three game-winning goals in four games. Now, it'd be one thing if it's a seven-game series, which still even then would be impressive, but to have three game-winning goals in four games is absurd. But I know Rod Brind'Amour is getting dragged. I kind of got what he was saying. I wouldn't have said it. He probably should have just said, even though this is a sweep, it was a close series, and the bounces and the effort just was more in favor of Florida. But that series easily could have been 2-2, if you want to be fair, when you look at how long those games were and how close those games were as well.
That might be ESPN's lead tomorrow. Who got swept better? Who was more impressive in their sweep, the Hurricanes or the Lakers? We debate next.
You're expecting ESPN to talk about hockey that long?
That's true. You're right. You're right.
Even though they have a big deal with the NHL, it wasn't that long ago where Stephen A. Smith didn't even care about the Rangers being a professional team, and then you know, had to put out a pro Ranger video because definitely Gary Bettman and company got annoyed with him and was a little perturbed at Stephen A. Smith. So I don't think they're bringing on Barry Melrose or P.K. Subban to talk about that. Maybe they do like a good 5 minutes on PTI, and that's a question that they ask. But you have it from Windhorse the day before. And I thought, will you agree with this? What Windhorst said, I thought, was funnier than what Rod Brind'Amour said, the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes.
Well, especially when you consider the source and who it's coming from and his connection to LeBron James, yes. It's more laughable because he's almost like he was treating, like, in a way, almost the Lakers won. Like,
he's,
hey, look at the Lakers. Look how impressive they were, despite the fact they just lost 4-0. Look at them, man. They were great, huh?
Let me ask you this. If you're a Carolina Hurricanes fan, would you rather... Now, this is like asking, like, which disease would you rather have? But would you rather lose in four games where they were all so close and you wake up today saying, how the heck did we not get one? Or would you rather have this series go to seven and then you lose in like an overtime game seven, but at least you showed up technically in the series and you got some wins on the board?
I would choose game seven overtime heartbreak just because I want to feel like my team is in it. And even then, looking back, I don't want people to go, oh, they got swept. It wasn't even close, because that's definitely something we all do, is the further away we get removed from it, 5, 10, 15 years. Like, I do want to at least feel like, even if my team can't win, I want to at least feel that, okay, they were right there. It wasn't,
you get
like
some of the highs of the winning.
Embarrassment of just like, oh, they got swept, no-showed.
Yeah, you get some of the highs of, even though you didn't win the series, like, let's say you win a game six, the force of game seven, at least you get those 24 hours of feeling like you're on cloud nine.
And game seven overtime would be painful, but like you said, at least you win three games and there's some reason to hope. I mean, the Panthers fans got no reason for hope, and anytime they did, it was immediately wiped away, whether it's a quadruple overtime goal or a goal of 4-point, or as I say, sorry, Panthers fans, Hurricanes fans. It's like they got seconds, maybe like 5 seconds total of hope or joy in that series. You should get three wins out of you going to game seven.
It reminds me a lot like the Rangers losing to the Kings in the Stanley Cup final back in 2014, I'm pretty sure that was, because there was a two overtime game in there. There was two other overtime games, I believe, as well. It was, and they just didn't find the way to win any of those games. And you go back to Madison Square Garden, you drop that game three, you knew the series was over, then they win game four, then you get into another overtime game in game five, and you end up losing. That is maddening, though. It's maddening however you lose, but when you lose quickly and you showed up, it's one thing. I think it's easier if you just get steamrolled in a sweep and you lose 4-0, you lose 5-2, 3-1, and then 6-0. You just weren't better. But when all those games were one-goal games, where it's four overtimes the first game, an overtime the second game, the third game 1-0, and the fourth game you lose in literally the final 5 seconds, you just got to think you're cursed at that point. Like, what the heck do you have to do to go get a win? And if you're a Hurricanes fan today, I think you just wake up and you look up at the ceiling and you go, why the heck did the hockey gods do us like that?
Yeah, that's cruel. That is cruel and unusual punishment to suffer four heartbreaking losses like that in a row when you're so close to kind of seeing the end goal.
All righty, let's get to the news brief right now. I'll teach you some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. Let's roll.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
The Boston Celtics are an 8-point favorite tonight, even though they're down 3-1 in this series. Heat coach Eric Spoelstra says his team doesn't care that they're an 8-point underdog.
We don't give a shit. I'm trying to compete. You know, this is a great opportunity. And our guys love these kind of challenges. Love to compete. Love, the playoffs, and love playing in an environment like this. You know, this is what it's about. It's not about getting ahead of it. You want to be present for the competitive nature of what we can expect tonight. That's how our guys are wired.
Now, I know it's weird to question Vegas, because usually when you question Vegas, Hickey, you lose. But when you tell me Boston was the home team in this series, that they were favorite in the first two games, I understand that. Even when they lost the first game, you would expect them then to win the second game. And you were someone that picked the Heat. You thought, though, that Boston was going to win the second game. So I understand why Boston was the favorite in the first two. When they're up, though, 2-0, and you're going back to Miami, and Miami's now getting on their home court, I didn't get how Miami in Game 3 wasn't a favorite, and it was Boston who was still the favorite. And then in Game 4, they finally made the Heat the favorite. Tonight, this just comes off to me as Vegas is expecting the Boston Celtics to blow out the Miami Heat, because it's one thing to make them an 8-point favorite, but you wonder why they're an 8-point favorite. Like, it makes no sense after what we've seen through the first four games why they are an 8-point favorite tonight. But you look at, that's Vegas telling you they expect this thing to go six, and most people are going to look at that 8-point spread and they're going to say, oh, plus the points. Let me plus the points. I don't know if Boston is going to definitely win the game, so therefore, I'm going to take Miami plus the 8 points. When you get into that type of scenario, usually Vegas does win. So I'm going to say that Boston wins the game tonight by 9 points. But I do find it funny that Miami keeps on telling you they don't care about the outside noise. They don't care about people doubting us. You know, whenever a team gives you that line, when they say they don't care, they actually do care.
And that's the team, the Heat, that will take that bulletin board material, use it. I'm sure Jimmy Butler knows that number in his head without a doubt. And that's, if I had to guess one number being said in shoot around and before, you know, they come out to the court, I bet you it's 8. No one's giving us a chance. Vegas thinks we stink. We're going back to Miami, fellas. I guess that being a big rallying cry tonight.
Oh, yeah, they're going back to Miami for a game 6.
Well, going back to Miami anyway. That's kind of the old Shaquille O'Neal packing one suit on the trip.
Yeah, that
sort
made
of thing.
No sense. That made absolutely no sense what he said a few weeks ago. So, Hickey, let me ask you. 8-point spread tonight. You plussing the points tonight?
Yes, sir. Taking the Heat.
Folks, I think you have your answer on how to bet this one. That's all I'm going to say. Let's go to Jimmy Butler. He says the team will be ready to play in Game 5.
We'll be okay. Let's get back to doing what we've always done to get us to this point. Continually have belief in one another, knowing that we're going to win, and we will. We just got to play harder. Like, there's not too much to say with this group because we already know, so we just got to go out there and execute.
Let's go to Shams Charania. He reveals that LeBron James had a torn tendon in his foot. We go to the Pat McAfee Show.
Leads the Lakers from 2-10 all the way to the Western Conference Finals, and he plays Pat the last few months of the season with a torn tendon in his foot that could need surgery this summer. I'm told he's going to be reevaluating that foot. It's very possible he might need surgery on that foot that could sideline him for 2 months. But, you know, 2 months over the offseason, get that foot right. I think that's something he's going to have to get evaluated. And if he's going to need surgery, that'll shelve him for a little bit.
We all know LeBron's still a fantastic player. Hot take of the day. But when you hear that news and you knew there was something wrong with his foot, it makes you ask many questions. Like, was some of him looking worn out at the end of those games due to that foot injury? Or was it due to wear and tear on the body and old age and age catching up to him? And then if he does get the surgery, how long is the rehab process? Can he get back to being that dominant LeBron James form? Because you've seen now for the last few years, LeBron at times looked like he's the best player in the league, but not be regarded as the best player in the league. He's still a top 10 player in the sport. You could probably still argue he's a top 5 player in the sport. He's not like falling off a cliff, but he's starting to look a little bit more and more less like the immortal LeBron James, where there was never any flaw in his game. Yeah, even when LeBron falls off just a little bit, he's still one of the more dominant players in the league. But I wonder if he needs a surgery about to turn 39. Just what does the future start to look like for LeBron James? Let's go to Adam Silver. Spineless Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, says he thought 90s basketball was too physical. This courtesy of Showtime Basketball.
There was a point, I believe, you know, probably in around the late 90s when the game became too physical. And I think we lost some of
For our viewers, you mean?
Yeah, and I think for our fans, from the aesthetic enjoyment of the game, where it de-emphasized the particular skill a player had and maybe weighted too heavily physicality, where a big, strong player could come in and prevent a incredibly skilled player from doing those kinds of things.
You know what he just did? And I don't think these were his intentions. I think Spineless Silver was just trying to protect the players of the NBA these days that get called soft and how basketball is no longer physical. But he just admitted that. Like, in trying to defend the players these days, he made it seem like the physicality of the 90s was a bad thing. Doesn't that further just enhance the argument and give more fuel to the fire to the crowd of people that talk about these NBA players now being soft and how they wouldn't be able to play, which is always a dumb conversation, in the 80s and the 90s? Like, I feel as if he just gave the commissioner more ammunition to the people that want to further that argument and further that debate and further that conversation about the lack of physicality now in the association.
Is he wrong, though?
He's not. He's not wrong. The game was more physical back then. Now it seems like each and every play gets reviewed for a flagrant if you make contact. But I don't think he put the players in a good spot now, which he was trying to do. And I look at what he just said, it was almost as if, like, why do you even have to go there? Even if you got asked about the physicality of the NBA back in the day, I don't think you need to publicly admit that it was more physical in the 80s and the 90s and then make that seem as if it was a bad thing that it got too physical. I just don't even get why he went there, Hickey.
Well, I don't know, question if it was just kind of like, the how the game has evolved, because it has now evolved towards way more of a skill game. Can you argue that the referees now are blowing the whistle too much? Absolutely. But now you're starting to see the talents at least shown off a lot more. Fans love scoring, a lot more scoring now than there was 20, 30 years ago. So in terms of defending the sport, and like I said, maybe he was trying to push back on those that are calling people soft these days. That's where you kind of go and say, you know what? Everyone loves to live, in the past and reminisce about the quote-unquote good old days, but you don't really realize that the good old days were not as great as they were in the time that you think they were looking back at them.
I can't tell you, though, the NBA right now is this great product. I can't sit here right now and tell you that I'm in love with the NBA. Like, I love some stories in the NBA right now. Like, I love this Denver Nuggets story. I think they're really fun to watch. I love watching Jimmy Butler as well. LeBron's getting older, but he's still fun to watch. But, the Warriors clearly with Steph Curry, extremely fun to watch. But I can't say that the sport is in this great place right now, because it seems like usually when people are talking about the NBA, it's two things: drama off the court or load management. And when that dominates the news cycle, I mean, that dominates the way that your sport's perceived, I don't think that's a good thing for the sports, because I like to talk about the games. But when you lose sight of the games because your players aren't playing a ton and you don't know when they're going to show up, and then we're talking about who's going to force a trade, who's going to do this, who's going to do that, and that almost seems as if it's more important than the regular season, that's problematic to me with at least the way that your league is run. But that goes back to Adam Silver just having zero control over the league and just catering to everything about the players. Crazy Kwame Brown, he crushes LeBron for getting swept by the Nuggets.
LeBron, you not that, bro. I'm sorry. I can't hate to say it. You are a stat sheet junkie. You a bad boy when it comes to stats. Throughout history, people are going to, the little nerds are going to look up your stat line, and they're going to say, he got to be the greatest player that ever played the game. And people who actually play are going to know, that is bullshit. I have never seen a guy of your caliber, supposed caliber, you don't even get a shot off? And you mean to tell me that you didn't have the nerve to tell me you were just going to run in there and pump fake, and beg for the ref to bail your ass out again? How many times we got to see you flop? Now you're going to come back at 39, and they're going to try to carry you to the playoffs and the finals again? Do you know what that's going to look like? That's going to be horrible, trying to carry a 39-year-old aging, failing superstar.
Hickey, he's crazy. If anyone operating with the same brain is going to say that the legacy of LeBron James gets impacted off of one series and what he's doing at 38, and he just views LeBron as a stat padder, that makes no sense to me. Like, what I just heard the last 40 seconds, I'm now dumber from hearing, because at no point did that make any sense, or is that a coherent response there, Hickey?
Actually makes a lot of sense, because Kwame Brown, at least to me, and maybe, I'm in the minority here, but I feel like to most people, is known for one thing and one thing only.
Being a bust.
Stephen A. Smith's epic rant about how he's a bona fide scrub, Can't, has, you know, no hands, no footwork, can't do the same post move two times.
You're not in the minority, though. Everyone associates Kwame Brown with being a bust.
So it's like when we're talking about the guy, and that's always known for as being a really bad basketball player, then hearing him call a great basketball player bad is just, it's
funny.
Comical to say the least, but it just goes in one ear and out the other. And
not just a great basketball player, an all-time great
just
basketball
like a
player.
Waste of oxygen for anyone actually giving him time.
You know what it
on
is,
social
though?
Media.
It speaks more to our society now. We live in a world where everything you do in the moment impacts your legacy. Over this stupid GOAT debate, which I absolutely hate, between LeBron and Michael. Like, I don't even care at this point where what side of the fence you lie on that. I think the debate has become so stupid. But Kwame Brown thinking one moment basically, like, eliminates 20 years of basketball greatness by LeBron James, and he's just a stat junkie? And my favorite part of that, Hickey, guys that played the game like me really, really know what LeBron is. I'm sorry, Kwame Brown. And I'm not someone that says you need to be great to give an opinion because, right, it would be hypocritical, right? I never made the NBA. I never played college basketball, so why should I be able to give an opinion? But there's a difference in giving an opinion and giving a bold take and then just looking like a jackass and a clown. And that's what Kwame Brown did right there. He sounded like a jackass and he looked like a clown when spewing that nonsense. Here is John Harbaugh on Lamar Jackson's lofty passing goals. He wants to throw for 6,000 yards and throw the football more this season, courtesy of the Adam Jones pod.
6,000 yards? Hey, I'm all for it. I mean, we get over 4,000 yards, that would be spectacular. You know, and that's, to me, you know, 4,000 yards would be a great goal. I still think we want to run it for, you know, a lot of yards. I mean, you know, what that number is, I don't know, 2,000 something. Whatever it ends up being, but we're still going to try to run the ball. But I would think more explosive plays, run and pass, would be a big part of where we're going this year.
That's a tough spot for John Harbaugh, because everyone knows it's ridiculous to suggest that any quarterback's going to throw for 6,000 yards. Like, even if someone said Patrick Mahomes is going to throw for 6,000 yards, and that's his goal, I would laugh about that, and we're talking about someone that's been well over 5,000 yards and is the greatest quarterback in the game right now, even with adding an extra game and how much teams do throw the football right now in the year of 2023. But you really can't crush the goal if you're a John Harbaugh, because that is your star quarterback. That's the guy that you just played, paid so much money. Like, even in Patrick Mahomes' best statistical passing yardage season, it was 5,250. So for a guy that what Lamar's career high is like 3,100 and some change, I thought that was fair where Harbaugh was like, all right, let's try for 4,000 if we want to throw the football more. And notice how he's like, oh yeah, then let's run for 2,000. And that's how he kind of did the math to get to six. Now, he's not rushing for 2,000 anyway. He's not probably throwing for 4,000. But if you tell me Lamar this year goes like almost 1,000 rushing yards and 3,300 passing yards, that would be a great MVP type of season for Lamar Jackson, Hickster.
I would agree, especially a nice bounce back year from what we've seen the last few years. The bigger thing is, you know,
gotta say healthy.
Right, I'm just going to say, stats are important, but so is him playing 17 games.
Let's go to Josh McDaniels. He discusses the severity of Jimmy G's injury.
You won't see him today. There's a number of guys that you're not going to see. Again, I'm not going to, you'll see him. I mean, I'm not going to run down a list every time here, but, you know, no, he's going through his process just like we knew he would. Nothing has happened that would surprise us based on, you know, the information we had.
Yeah, right now that's not a problem that Jimmy G is out. I know he got surgery and that word is alarming, but they expect him to be ready by training camp. Let's go one more to Josh McDaniels. He says he has no problem with Devontae Adams, quotes, questioning the roster construction.
Thing I'd say about a player like Devontae, and we have many other players in the same category, is they have an opinion and a voice because they've earned it. And I respect the hell out of anything that they would say or suggest or anything like that during the course of the process of trying to improve our team, which I know where Devontae comes from. He's a competitor. He wants to win. And that's really his sole focus. And, you know, that's what he does here every day.
Stan McDaniels, but that was a very likable answer because he could have been a jerk when discussing the Devontae Adams quote. But the fact that he said, no, I believe that Davante Adams should have that right to question the roster, and he's earned that in this league, I think that's a good way to kind of smooth over any of the drama from this situation.
Right. Diffuse the situation. That's the perfect answer to use.
Now the question is, how does Davante Adams kind of react to that? And he says he's happy to be a Raider, and here's the classic line. The quote was overblown.
You can grab something and run with it if you want, just, you know, to get clicks, and that's what people often do with me and things that I say, whether I misspeak or if I speak up. But at the end of the day, I'm a Raider, and I'm excited to be here. I love my head coach, and I love the general manager here and everybody. I mean, from the top to the bottom. So we got a lot of guys in here that know me well by this point and know my intentions. No, I just want to win. I'm here to try to win a Super Bowl like everybody else is on their team. So y'all can do that. If you're that bored, like, go play Monopoly or some shit.
Well, he did the interview, Hickey. And in the interview, we all know that he's not happy with Derek Carr getting let go, and that was his guy. It doesn't mean he dislikes Jimmy Garoppolo, but then he questioned the front office. So it's one of those things where you say something, and you don't like the reaction to it, and you're annoyed that people go after you with the truth of what you said, and then it's like all of a sudden, you know what, it gets overblown, and then you attack the media. That doesn't make sense to me. It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. That's the News Brief. We'll come on back.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing, help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL plasma center and be rewarded for your generosity.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, how we doing? Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. I am in Centennial, Colorado right now as the Denver Nuggets are waiting to see when the NBA Finals are going to start and when they're going to have their opponent. You know that the date of Game 1 of the NBA Finals is, of course, going to be a week from today, as that's going to be June 1st. Will it be the Miami Heat or will it be the Boston Celtics? That series now, Miami in a 3-1 advantage, and Boston has a Game 5 tonight on their home court. We'll see if they can send it back to Miami for Game 6. So you know when Game 1's going to be. It's just who you're going to be able to play. And it's kind of weird because you still have to talk about Denver, even though they've been off the last few days because they won in 4 games. And if you listen to this show, you know how much I have supported the Denver Nuggets, really, ever since 2020, believing in this team, where I did a Sports Minute in 2020 and talked about how special this group was going to be. In 2021, I thought they were trending to be an NBA championship team, and then Jamal Murray unfortunately gets hurt against the Golden State Warriors, and everyone was taking their shots at them the last 2 years. Oh, Nikola Jokic can win an MVP, but he can't win big playoff games. I said, now, hold on, wait a second. This team's not ready to win right now, even though they were trending that way, because Jamal Murray, who's so important to the culture and the fabric of what you see from Denver, was out with an ACL injury. And now Jamal Murray's back. You see the Joker, who had another MVP type of season. And if it wasn't for the fact that people just don't like giving out the award back-to-back-to-back years to one person, he probably would have won it. Now, that's not taking anything away from Embiid or Giannis Antetokounmpo. Embiid won it. He was deserving of it. So was Joker, and so was Giannis as well for what they did in the regular season. But now you're seeing everyone kind of get shut up by anyone that was doubting Denver. And the last mountain to climb and the last speed bump to jump over is winning these next 4 games and being NBA champions. And the one part of the conversation that just annoys me, when people don't want to appreciate greatness or people want to take away from a team that they didn't think was going to get there just because they're stubborn in their opinions, is when people call a team boring. And I don't know about you, Hickey, but when I watch Denver, Nikola Jokic does things that we've never seen. I don't get how people could call him boring. Jamal Murray, that story, overcoming the injury, getting back to this dominant form, and just being an assassin isn't boring to me. And I think it's very lazy and it's very pathetic when you don't get a team in the finals from a market that's very popular and big and sexy where all throughout the year people were doubting Denver, and now there are some that want to take away from Denver. Whether that was Mark Jackson just being a joke, not putting Nikola Jokic in the top five and then saying, oh, it was a mistake, blah, blah, blah. Or we'll get to the ridiculous comments by Chris Mannix in just a second. If you do this for a living, where you cover sports, you cover stories, I don't get how anyone writes the story of the Denver Nuggets. That's without even knowing if they're going to win the championship or not. And their first thought is that this team is boring. And what's funny to me about this, Hickey, everyone that says Denver is boring are the same people that bitch about all the drama in the NBA and players leaving teams and also load management as well and the lack of commitment from some stars. You look at Denver, this is everything you want in a basketball team. You have a generational player in Nikola Jokic, and his running mate is underappreciated and someone that's just an assassin and is an absolute killer. I don't get the boring tag for this Denver team.
Same. They run an exciting style of branded on offense. It's almost kind of Warriors-esque the way they run their offense. They're one of the highest scoring teams in the league. They have a guy who, like I said, won two MVPs, finished second. So, arguably right there, the second best player in the league, bare minimum, for the last 3 years. There's a lot to like about this team. A nice journey with their head coach as well. There's a lot of good storylines, and they just continually don't get the respect they deserve.
How many years do people complain about Golden State? And they go, oh, I don't like the way that team was constructed. There's too many stars on that team. Now you have one star and a second player who I think is great, but he's not considered a star. He's not considered number one in a championship team, which is fair, in Jamal Murray. And now people are going to tell me that they're boring. That's another part of it. You can't win. If you have too many stars, people go, oh, that's not a genuine championship. And then when you don't have enough stars, people call you boring. It was the same thing with Milwaukee when the Bucks won the title.
Catch 22.
It's just stupid. You never end up winning here. Here's Chris Mannix on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's just hear this jackassery. He explains why he thinks the Nuggets aren't interesting.
Frankly, the Nuggets aren't very interesting. Like, Nikola Jokic is arguably the best player in the game right now, but he's not someone that does a lot of interviews outside of the NBA-mandated stuff. You're not going to see a lot of profiles on Nikola Jokic. Jamal Murray, great player, not especially interesting. Michael Porter Jr., excellent player, not especially interesting. At least not compared to what we have at the bottom of the playoff bracket, where you've got drama in Los Angeles almost weekly. You've got the Suns. Can they succeed in this first year with Kevin Durant? The Warriors, all their dysfunction this year. The Clippers, can they get it together? The Nuggets' problem is they're not respected. They're just not talked about. People just don't find them as interesting as some of the teams on the bottom half of the bracket. They're just not a compelling team to talk about, to write about, at least not as compelling as some of the other teams I mentioned.
That's the dumbest thing that I've ever heard. Because his reason for knocking Nikola Jokic had nothing to do with his basketball ability. It's because he doesn't do a ton of interviews, or he doesn't think he's a great quote. Like, there's a difference if you think someone is a boring human being, and then a difference in him being a boring basketball player. And with what he does on the court, I don't care if he gives a great quote or not to the media. If you watch the games, he is phenomenal to watch. You can't walk away and say that Denver is boring when you have a unicorn in Nikola Jokic and you're downplaying the story of Jamal Murray. The guy tore his ACL, has come right back, and has got right back into that assassin form that everyone loved in the bubble. That's just lazy by Chris Mannix. And that just, it sounds like Chris Mannix is upset. I don't know where Chris is from, but it just sounds like Chris is upset, and I'm assuming he covers each and every final because he covered the NBAs for forever, that he has to come out here to beautiful Denver, Colorado. That's what it sounds like to me by Chris Mannix. Just lame. Really is.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL Plasma Center and be rewarded for your generosity.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
So Jimmy Garoppolo got surgery in the offseason. He is not going to be able to participate in OTAs, but he is expected to be fine to get back on the field by the start of training camp for the Las Vegas Raiders. Hickey, the more and more I'm thinking about Jimmy G in Las Vegas, and I never really had any expectations to begin with, but it's the same way that I thought about Derek Carr last year. That even when you get a new deal, and that's what Derek Carr got last year, but it was very misleading when you look at the outs in that contract, there's sometimes you get a deal where you're just like a placeholder. And Jimmy G is basically the Derek Carr version of the placeholder now in 2023 in Vegas, except Jimmy G just gets hurt more. Because you look at the details in this contract, like at first you say, 3 years, $72 million, which is not a tremendous amount of money for a quarterback, but you then try to figure out what the outs are in the contract. And you look at the dead cap, you know he's a starting quarterback this year, the dead cap's $33.75 million. But in 2024, in year two of the contract, the dead cap falls all the way down to $11.25 million, which we've seen the way that teams have moved on from quarterbacks with significantly more dead cap when you look at the past of a Carson Wentz when the Eagles gave up on him, or Jared Goff when the LA Rams said we had to go out there and get Matthew Stafford. I don't think it's crazy, even though Jimmy G is a McDaniels guy, and let's just assume that McDaniels is there for year number three in Vegas, which we'll see if that actually does happen, that this could be one and done for Jimmy G with the Vegas Raiders.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was brought in as a guy, as a bridge, right? The only question is, okay, what are they going to go find their quarterback of the future? Because you kind of knew going in, like I said, not only do they downgrade, I would say, going from Derek Carr to Jimmy G, but that's not a guy in Jimmy G you can count on for multiple years to be healthy and on the field. So it's not like he's your finishing piece, if you will, a quarterback. If you're Josh McDaniels and you go, okay, we got quarterback set, let's worry about the rest of the team. He's more of a bridge guy.
I'll go on to say this. The only way Jimmy G's on the team next year is if he's just serving as that mentor role and they want to wait to throw whoever they draft in the first round to the Wolves. If they just want to wait on that buffering kind of process to making you the number one or the first round draft pick to them being the starting quarterback for the Las Vegas Raiders. But this is a classic move where the Raiders, and let's just say Josh McDaniels and David Ziegler, didn't get along with Derek Carr. They knew they had to move on from Derek Carr. That's fine. I don't think Derek Carr is this great quarterback in this league. He's not a bad quarterback. He's a fine quarterback. You know, he shows you moments where he looks like a top 10 quarterback. He's a good leader. But whenever you start to believe in Derek Carr, and whenever you're about to say, okay, here comes Derek Carr, here comes the belief level, everything you hear about Derek Carr, how he's supposed to be this and he's supposed to be that, he shows you that he's not as great as what some try to prop him up and puff him up to be. But when you get rid of someone, you have to give me a better replacement than just Jimmy Garoppolo. Who, Jimmy Garoppolo, sure, he wins games, but I can't say that this Raiders roster is a great roster. Sure, on the offense side of the ball, you got Josh Jacobs, you have Davante Adams, but defensively, that's going to be a team that's leaking all over like they were last year on the defensive side of the field. And Jimmy G, you can't ever expect him to be healthy. So it's like almost damned if you do, damned if you don't. But if you get rid of Derek Carr, immediately you had to bring in someone else that's better. And it's funny to me, after all the talk about Brady maybe going there, that Brady actually goes there, but it's not to play. It's to be a minority owner, Hickey, with Mark Davis. Like, that's hilarious to me. Where if you would have told me that Brady was going to Vegas this offseason, it would be to play. No one would have ever thought he would have been a minority owner, even with his partnerships and his dealings in the business world before, especially in sports, with Mark Davis.
Brady's a Vegas guy. You know, Peyton Manning moved out to Denver, loves Denver sports. Brady now is Mr. Vegas. Aces, Raiders, I believe also a pickleball league in Vegas, I believe as well. He
owns a pickleball team?
Yes.
Now, you know me.
He has a diverse portfolio.
I'm a Brady realist, the Brady sycophant, whatever you want to call me. I had no clue that Tommy Brady, he's an owner of a pickleball team?
Or league, one of the two, yeah.
Can you look that up and give me the direct term for that and what the actual role is? I know pickleball is a really popular sport right now. Extremely popular. Yeah, you walk around the streets of New York City on a weekend, you see everyone playing pickleball. I even know you have a pickleball paddle, hot take hickey. I had to get two because the first one you brought, you got shamed because it wasn't a good enough pickleball paddle by some old lady.
That's so right.
You and your girlfriend had to go get another pickleball
paddle. For anyone listening, graphite racket's the way to go.
You got shamed by an old lady. Like, just use the regular pickleball stick that you got originally, or the paddle.
Who we beat, too, by the way, but that's...
And you let her talk smack to you. And see, that's...
Well, it wasn't like she was wrong. It was just...
You beat her, did you not?
No, we got smoked because she had this ringer as her partner.
You just
said you beat her. No, we smoked her. She was terrible. But she had a ringer as a partner where we just couldn't return any of his serves. And he smoked us. But she didn't do anything
to...
We lost, but we beat her in a way. Like, she didn't do anything to contribute to the win. We lost, yeah. Like, we lost to her, but she's not...
All right, Brian Windhorse.
We are both
better.
That was
the greatest pickleball loss that you'll ever see to an 80-year-old woman.
It was more just the fact that she was just standing there. The 3 points we got because we drilled it right at her. But, yeah, she technically got the win in her scorecard. Congratulations.
You sound like a loser here. Do you have the title on Brady and what
the he's an investor in Major League Pickleball. I'm trying to look for it. It says he owns a team. I just can't see the team name right now.
Did you even know that there was a professional pickleball league? I didn't even know that.
Not in Major League Pickleball. I know that's, I think there is like,
that's an actual thing.
Oh, Rick Barry. Rick Barry comes to the show. I feel like anytime he's on the show, he's always traveling to some tournament.
Yeah, so he plays pickleball, but that's a professional league that he's in? I thought he was just like playing with his friends or something like that.
Oh, no. I knew that was some sort of big-time tournament. He's a big pickleball guy.
So there's like a professional pickleball league is what you're telling me?
MLP.
MLP.
Not to be confused with MLB.
Major League Pickleball. Maybe you should do some announcing for them. I think that'd be good for you. I think it'd be good for your resume.
Oh, he just pickled him hard with that right-hand serve.
Yeah, you shouldn't say that one. That just sounds wrong. He pickled him hard.
No, that's a term. That is a term.
All right. What are you opening up an OnlyFans channel? The bottom line is, when you look at Jimmy G in Las Vegas, I don't think this relationship's gonna last that long. And he's just paving the way to eventually mentor a quarterback they're gonna be drafting this upcoming season.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give Grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL plasma center and be rewarded for your generosity.